Hello, this is Abby.
Dear Abby, this is gonna be a long one.
Oh boy.
Dear Abby, how do you tell the difference between a new exciting crush and a rebound?
Does it matter?
Dear Abby.
Dear Abby.
Dear Abby.
Welcome to our little corner of the internet. This is the Dear Abby podcast. I hope you stay and hang out with us. See you in a sec. Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of Dear Abby. It has been a long time that I've been making this podcast, and I just want to say thank you for people who have been listening from the beginning. Thank you to the people who just started listening and are catching up. Thank you to anyone who's re-listened to episodes. You guys are amazing, and I am truly so grateful to have anyone listen, you know? So thank you from the bottom of my heart, my cold, sad heart. Sometimes I just think it's really crazy how long I have been making the podcast, and it doesn't feel like that long at all. It feels like it's been 2 months, 3 months maybe, but also it kind of has felt like it's been 10 years. It's a time warp thing, because I remember when I first started recording this podcast, I think I was living in Huntington, and I was living in a house with a bunch of other girls, and I would record it in my bedroom. And I was also streaming on Twitch every single day. It's when I was working from home, so I had more time. You know, I didn't have a commute, so it was just clock in, clock out. So I was streaming, I was podcasting, and I weirdly miss those days. Also, I had my dog when I first started recording. I had just barely kind of been through the divorce. And it's really weird that it's been so long, because I've changed so much since then. My recovery with OCD is so different. I'm in a better place now. It's just crazy. So feeling a little nostalgic from when we first began this whole Dear Abby podcast, which, by the way, my dad actually helped me pick that name. Thank you, Father. He is an avid listener of the podcast, so thank you, Father, again. And my mom, of course. I don't think she helped with the name, though, so sorry, Mom. Today, we are talking about flight anxiety. So I'm going to go into this week, give a little bit of a life update, and then the meat of the episode, I wanted to share my experience with having flight anxiety. I still experience this every single time. Not every single time. 90% of my flights, I experience this type of anxiety. And I wanted to share kind of in depth, like the thoughts, the feelings, the sensations, just how that, you know, comes up when I'm on a plane and in the airport and everything like that. So we're going in depth to that, because it's a very specific type of anxiety, or I guess situational anxiety. So, and I know a lot of people struggle with this, because it's very common, because it is kind of a crazy thing to be flying in the sky in a giant metal container and you have no control. But I honestly have, even though I still get anxiety, as in I still have the thoughts and everything, I have a much more pleasant time flying, and just ways that I can accept the anxiety, accept the fear, and, you know, live with it, I guess, but also help it decrease so that my flying experience isn't just chronically horrible. That's what I'm talking about today. But first, I'm gonna give some life updates. Life update number one. This is the big dub of the week. My boyfriend finally got home from Europe. Woohoo! It's been a full month. I forgot how big he is, and like tall, and just like how big he is, because he's 6'2". So I'm really lucky, ladies, that I got a tall man. You know, I've never experienced that before. I'm not kidding. Every single guy I've ever dated was pretty short. Not super tall, not super short, just average. And maybe 6'2 is average, but it feels tall to me, because I've only dated and been with not tall people. Not short people, just not tall people. And so when I saw him, let me back up. This is how it went. My boyfriend, who I've been dating for almost 2 years now, he went to Europe for a full month. I was very excited for him to come home, okay? I really just really missed him. Like, it was weird to not have him. But I'm also great at kind of I have some anxious avoidant, both attachment tendencies, okay? Sometimes I'm very avoidant. Sometimes I'm very anxious. Sometimes I'm totally secure. So, You know, it just depends on the day, depends on the hormones, and it's that's life. I'd say I'm more secure now, but definitely when someone leaves for a while, I kind of start to purposefully kind of make myself feel like I don't care. And I think that's obviously a defense coping mechanism, whatever that is, not the healthiest thing. So I have to internally fight that back and forth. But I knew I missed him. I just like didn't let myself feel anything. I guess it was scary to admit to myself that I really missed him. And I don't know. That's still something that I am experiencing sometimes. So I knew he was coming home. And the day before, I felt so nervous because when you haven't seen someone in a long time, like a significant other, if they've been gone, if whatever, you feel like so nervous. At least for me, I feel nervous when they come back because I feel like I don't know them, even though I talk to them every single day and FaceTimed. But because you haven't been in like their presence and you haven't felt their energy or seen their face, I don't know, it's just, it's so different. I was anxious and excited and nervous. So I made him a cake because I wanted to do something nice because I missed him. I wanted him to feel loved when he got back. So I made him some funfetti. I put some pudding in there, made some homemade frosting, made a cute little cake. I'm not a great cake decorator, but I think it's fun. I was like, okay, cool. I've got this in the bag. Like, I'm not going to be super emotional. I'm cool. I'm just cool, calm, collected. The second that I heard the gate open to my apartment and I could hear that someone was walking in, I knew it was him because I knew he was on his way. I instantly just started sobbing because I don't know. I just really missed him and it was such a relief that he came home. And I didn't think I was going to cry like that, but I couldn't help it. And I was like, okay, oh my gosh, I feel so stupid for crying because it's not like he was gone for that long or he wasn't doing anything dangerous other than bouldering and climbing 30 feet in the air. But, you know, I just felt overwhelmed with emotions, probably because I was suppressing for a while. So then when I saw him, I just burst into tears and I was like, I missed you. And that's all I said. And then I just started crying and then we hugged and it was nice. So we just hung out all night and it was super fun. So that was a dub. Feels nice to be back in normal life, not constantly being alone and feeling like I'm going crazy, because that's the real thing. You don't do that much after work and stuff. You do feel like you're going crazy a little bit. Like I'm just constantly alone if he's not around because my sister has kids now. No one else that I know lives close to me. So it's like, that's really all that I have. And I don't have a lot of friends here yet. So I was starting to lose my mind a little bit, which is fun, you know? That was fun. You know when you're alone for too long and then you start to be really cringy and weird alone. And then you're like, no one's there to witness this. And then you actually feel like a weirdo. It got to that point consistently. So I was talking to myself a ton at that point. So it was about time to someone to help me and save me out of my rabbit hole. The L for this past week is I have lost so many of my socks that I now have probably 10 that don't have a match and only a couple that have matches, but I know they're around here somewhere. But it is one of those things, same with old jewelry that you can't find anymore or old pieces of clothing that just disappear and you see a picture and you're like, where did that go? That's how so many things have been in my life. Is there a place that I'm going and I'm forgetting that I'm going and then I just drop it and leave it there and then I don't ever remember that I have this secret place that I drop stuff and hide stuff? That's how it feels. It's devastating, especially when you see a picture and you're like, oh my gosh, I loved that top. Where did that go? How did that get lost? Okay, let's get into the meat of the episode, which is flight anxiety. Let me back up to where this all began. When I was in fourth grade, well, okay, first let me explain what it is from a non-therapist, non-psychologist point of view, just someone who experiences it. I have experienced flight anxiety when I fly, obviously, or when I'm in an airport, anything to do with an airport and flying. I just have so many thoughts, just bombarded. I don't know, I'm just bombarded with thoughts of what ifs and scenarios with planes. And I think my OCD kind of takes that and plays with it and makes my thoughts really weird, really, really weird thoughts. they just get worse and worse as the flight goes on. I feel panicky. I feel like I'm on the verge of like screaming and, you know, I can't get out. My brain will send me all these thoughts that are very scary. Like you're stuck, you're stuck. It's honestly horrific. At first, if you experience this for the first time, or if you have a panic attack for the first time on a flight, I've heard of people who that's happened to. Anyways, that's the gist of flight anxiety. So there's a ton of small other symptoms and stuff, but basically it's just when you are flying, when you are preparing for a flight, anything to do with flying, you just get physical symptoms, mental symptoms of anxiety. So my experience with flight anxiety started when I was a kid. My first flight, I believe, that I remember was when I was in fourth grade. We were going to Washington, D.C. for a choir, something about choir. And I was so anxious. I didn't really want to go on the trip like I wanted to, but the whole time I was just absolutely dreading it. Just dreading the whole trip. I hated singing, standing up and singing, because one of my friends passed out and it just stuck with me for the rest of my life. When I was in like second grade, I think it happened, or third grade. Or fourth grade. It happened in fourth grade. Yeah, I just was really anxious in elementary school, especially at this age. I feel like that's when that's my first memories of anxiety, is when I was probably like in third or fourth grade. Anywho, we took a flight to Washington, D.C., and my mom was actually able to come with us. So it was me and my sister and my mom, and then like the whole choir class, and we had my music teacher, and there's a couple other chaperones that were able to come. So I was very lucky my mom got to come, because I probably would have been an absolute disaster. But I remember the flight was the worst thing I've ever experienced, because A, I was already really sensitive to sounds. I really didn't like sounds, and it was so loud on the plane, and I've never experienced that type of consistent loud, like, shh sound, and I remember hating it. Now I find it kind of relaxing, but when I was young, it was so scary to me. I didn't like the sound of, like, the AC. I had to turn the AC thing off because that was just overstimulating me. I think I remember very, very weirdly, I remember, putting my head down on someone's lap, and just, I remember the feeling of being like, I want to get out of here so bad. I want to die. Like, I just want to sleep, and I don't want to be awake, and I'm so scared. I feel so anxious. I feel like I was detached, like, it's so weird to remember being that young, but I really do remember some of these situations. Like, I can kind of go back into it. It's really weird. I was just really sensitive, so all of that stuff was really overstimulating. That was kind of the first experience that I had on a plane, so it wasn't like, it was since the first flight I had anxiety. Some people it's like not until they're older, or some people it kicks in randomly and they have a panic attack, or something happens and then they have flight anxiety. So it's not always like you've had it your whole life. You can be old and have it, you know, randomly. So it's very, very common. I know so many people that have experienced anxiety on flights. And I will say, not hopefully to like discourage or make it more real, but it is very common, because the concept of it, I think, is hard to digest. And that's what kind of gives you anxiety, is also like the lack of control over the situation and fully surrendering to someone else and to something that you don't necessarily understand. Or if you do understand it, it still doesn't matter. Sometimes it's just your body doesn't like it. So I mostly wanted to talk about the symptoms and also how I've helped myself with flight anxiety. So the symptoms that I've experienced, I'm kind of just going to list them out, maybe go into more detail, so people don't feel as weird, or maybe so they, yeah, just don't feel like alone in this. If you don't have my same symptoms, that's okay. Everyone's different. Everyone's bodies react differently. Everyone's brains are different. Most of the time, I feel detached. Like, I feel like I'm, you know, watching my life from a window, or I just feel completely detached from my body. That's very uncomfortable. And it's something that I experience in day-to-day life, but it's 100% worse on a plane because I'm flying, so I don't feel like grounded, I guess. That's a really uncomfortable sensation, is not feeling grounded. I like feeling safe and kind of not boxed in, but yeah, I like feeling, you know, safe and not flying in a giant metal container through the sky. That's the thought of that is very triggering to me. Derealization, depersonalization. I always feel like my stomach is dropping constantly, and that's normal to be on a plane, but I think when you do have anxiety, that's uncomfortable sensation really triggers, I think, a flood of thoughts or some emotions that are very unpleasant. More sensations are just thoughts, really uncomfortable thoughts. Just to give you guys the full range of thoughts that I have, it starts with, yeah, obviously, what if we crash? What if the plane chops in half because the wind's too powerful or someone didn't screw something in right on the plane? And then it just falls in half and then I'm on the caboose, so I'm going down and, you know, all of these, all of that stuff. Worst case scenario things. What if someone hijacks the plane? When I was a girl watching things about 9/11, I thought about that every single time I got on a plane. That's, those thoughts still come up. I don't see them as rational. I don't see them as probable. I just say, you know what? That is a possibility. Probably not, maybe, but if I die, I die, and I'd rather be peaceful when I die. It ranges from that to very existential, where, again, it's kind of like the feeling of not being grounded. That's very triggering for me. Even now I'm talking about this, I'm getting kind of anxious. I don't like that when you look out, you can't see anything. That freaks me out. And so it ranges from that to feeling like, what if? And I know how crazy this is. Trust me. Trust me. I know how dumb these are. But this is just the experience. And these are the type of thoughts that I've had before. Just to share the experience of what it's like. Where, what if my atoms, bear with me, what if all of my atoms just all of a sudden disperse and detach and I just float away? You guys, that, those are real thoughts that have triggered me before. I know how crazy that is, because I think if my atoms, for some reason, if my atoms, for some reason, just decided to disperse, just everything just detached, I wouldn't be able to think about it anymore, so it would just happen and it would be over fast. That's a great way to go. But also, that's the type of irrationality we're talking, where it's truly like mind-boggling and trippy almost. I feel like I am high every single time I have thoughts like that, but I am completely sober. I'm sobered up. Never smoked a thing of weed before. And it's only scary because it feels so real in the moment, and it feels so uncontrollable and so out of your body, so weird in the moment, that it feels like, oh my gosh, what if that happens? it's so funny looking back. It's a range of those types of weird thoughts, especially when you are already feeling a little bit weird out of your body and then you have weird thoughts, then you're like, oh my gosh, wait, what's happening? So I've learned from therapy, from listening to a million things about this type of stuff, it's really just a defense mechanism that your brain goes into. Same thing that happens when something traumatic is happening, whatever, your brain does, there's a mechanism that it uses to like detach, so things aren't as painful or whatever. I don't really know the science behind it. I just know that that's what happens to me a lot. And I've noticed that it's almost like it's just very common for my brain to do that pretty fast. But I'm learning how to, I guess, calm myself in different ways and stay in my body and try to breathe through things, try to ground myself with certain techniques so my brain doesn't do that as much. But sometimes it's like involuntary, it feels like. I don't know if it is or if it isn't. Don't know that much about it. But those are the main symptoms that I have. Obviously, there's like, you can have a full-blown panic attack. So that's like instant detachment. And then you just feel like there's alarms going off in your body. It's like if there was 3 million little men or women working in your body. And then there's like a red alert that goes off. And then all of them, you have the noise of everyone trying to figure out what's going on. That's kind of how a panic attack feels. And on a plane, it's even worse because you can't really do anything. I'm not saying that to trigger anyone, so sorry. Some of this is probably triggering, but you can handle it, okay? So don't give the anxiety, those thoughts, those feelings any power over you. Let them be there, and you kind of have to create a tolerance to these types of sensations or feelings or thoughts. So it's definitely work to do, but it's possible. You just have to create a higher tolerance to be able to be like, okay, I can handle this, and to be able to say that and believe it, and slowly you start to believe it more and more. More symptoms are heart palpitations, sweaty, you get very clammy, you feel like you're having a hot flash. You can also feel really shaky or cold, or you kind of go back and forth a little bit between the two, hot and cold, and you can feel lightheaded. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. of the symptoms that you can feel when I'm at the airport, because I've seen things happen at the airport where there's bombs or there's certain things that happen in public settings. Sometimes my brain does go there. Like, what if there was, are you allowed to say the B-O-M-B? What if there is that here in the airport? What if there's some type of undercover attack or something? My brain always picks up on that. That's very much an OCD thing, and they always pop up every single time at an airport. I think everyone thinks that though, you know, just because we see it and it does happen. And when you grow up learning about certain things, it's kind of inevitable that your brain is going to be like, oh, well, that happened here and we're here. So 1 + 2 = 3. But I think when you have this extra layer of physical anxiety and OCD, it feels a lot more real because you have all these symptoms that go with it that are more physical and it's consistent. It's not just like one and you're like, yeah, probably not, you know, but even if, you know, maybe not, it's consistently. So you don't just have to be like, oh, maybe not once. It's like you have to kind of have that attitude for hours, sometimes a whole day. So it's very much, it's much more relentless. Okay, so there's the long list of symptoms. Now, what can you do about that? Let's get to the more hopeful part of the podcast, to where all that stuff is very scary, feels very overwhelming, overpowering. So let's talk about what we can actually do about these things that we experience to make it more pleasant and actually be able to ride on a plane with having a good experience. Because I 100% believe and know from experience that it's possible to enjoy flights after having flight anxiety. First, I wanted to talk about thoughts specifically. So if you're someone that gets attacked by a lot of thoughts, not a lot of physical sensations, that's probably kind of rare. But if that is what happens, the best thing that I've done for myself with thoughts is to not push them away. Obviously, I talk about that all the time. Suppressing thoughts is never helpful. You can be like, hey, yeah, come on in. Come on in, join the party. What else you got, huh? Oh, you think I'm gonna all of a sudden explode? Okay, you think that the engine's gonna explode and then we're all gonna light on fire. Okay, that's entertaining. What else do you have? This is definitely a tolerance that you're trying to build. So a lot of what I'm gonna talk about is like building up tolerance to uncomfortable thoughts and realizing that you have more control over your experience than you might think internally. Even though there's a lot of things that pass by you and thoughts and feelings, that you are still able to be grounded and connected to yourself and feel empowered and strong. And you don't have to like seat back when those thoughts come in or sit back and feel like you're walking around your brain like you're not trying to wake up a lion or, you know, tiptoeing in your own head. That's so unfair. I know what that's like. I hate that more than anything. So this is kind of trying to take your power back and being like, okay, well, I'm going to scare you now, or not scare. Okay. Not scare you. Don't scare your brain. More just like I'm taking my power back and I insist you give me worse thoughts than that. Huh? Give me more, because that attitude I feel like helps your brain realize, oh, okay, wait, she's not that scared of these anymore, or she wants me to send her more. So these aren't that dangerous then. I don't really know how it works, but I know that it has worked for me and it's very helpful. That's kind of all I have for thoughts at the top of my head. I've thought about it, and that's the thing that works the most for me. And just being a witness to those thoughts, very common meditation type theology, if you will. Sometimes, I mean, the point eventually, I want to get to a point in, on flights or when I have all of those crazy thoughts, is to be able to laugh at it, because I just think it's funny. Even though it's so hard in the moment sometimes because it feels so uncontrollable, when you are able to realize and you're able to tolerate those thoughts and not obsess over why am I having those thoughts, what does that mean, I don't like the feeling I'm getting, all that stuff, then you're able to really actually enjoy and just see those thoughts for what they are. And it feels impossible and it feels like that's never going to happen, but it is. But you have to be committed to it. Okay, next for symptoms to tackle is physical symptoms. So let's start with when your chest feels tight, or when you feel, yeah, I think just a tight chest. If you feel really hot, if you feel like you're stuck, like you're getting all of these symptoms of being stuck, surrendering to those feelings is really helpful. And what that looks like, at least for me, the best way I can explain it is, I don't normally close my eyes. Sometimes it's helpful, sometimes it's not, but I get really anxious when I close my eyes sometimes on flights for some reason. It sometimes makes my grounding techniques worse. So I'll stare at the seat in front of me and I will focus on the five senses of, okay, I see this, I feel this, I'm touching this. Also talking to yourself what your physical symptoms are is really helpful. But when you feel the narratives and everything else coming after, once you point out what's happening, like the story behind it, don't attach to those and let those flow back and forth. And it's really uncomfortable. I'm not saying this is like, once you start doing this, you're going to feel totally fine and everything's going to feel better. It will be so uncomfortable. And it normally is with anxiety and OCD. That's just how it is. You can't ever fix that. You know, it's just going to be uncomfortable. The more you surrender to how uncomfortable it is, the more relaxed you'll feel eventually. But you kind of have to wait till the anxiety peaks without fidgeting with it. And then it'll start to subside, because I think it's hard to get to that peak anxiety. Sometimes I cut off my anxiety or that feeling of, I don't know how to explain it. It just feels like it's getting heightened. What am I saying? More and more heightened. Oh my gosh, I can't talk. And I think it's mostly just the adrenaline or something. Usually I'll try to cut that off because I'm scared. Like, oh my gosh, what if I lose my mind? What if something happens? But instead of cutting it off by saying something or suppressing or fidgeting too much, I relax my body, as uncomfortable as it is. I relax my body and I just flow with it. And it gets to the peak and then nothing happens. And then it starts to come back down. That's what I realized. So that's super helpful. And then the last thing I'll say is, I guess two more things. One really quick one is obviously find something to do. So don't try to compulsively distract or be desperately being like, oh, okay, I can't think about anxiety. I just have to draw this, or I just have to focus on the movie, because that energy is not going to be helpful. Just take it slow, but also try to engage in whatever you're doing. I like to draw a lot. That always kind of saves me when I am having anxiety for hours at a time and I don't get a lot of relief. Then I kind of just paint, and that slowly quiets my mind and I feel connected to myself again. So there's also activities that you can find that you do that aren't necessarily trying to distract, but it just gets you engaged in real life instead of in fairy tale land. Yeah, last thing, there's so many other pieces of advice, but last thing I will say is, so with flying, I think a huge physical sensation that causes anxiety when you're uncomfortable with it and you don't like to tolerate it is just the feeling of flying. Like the actual feeling of floating, of flying, like having your stomach drop, the takeoff when you're in the air, the sounds, like the actual, I guess not the sounds, that has nothing to do with the feeling, but I think it adds to it. What obviously you can work with the therapist on this. This is something that I think is really helpful, is like exposure to that feeling of having your stomach flipped upside down or your stomach drop. You can do that through taking elevator rides and going up and down and getting more comfortable with like surrendering to that feeling, or just relaxing, or even just being, you can even be so stressed out the whole time. I'm not saying, when I say surrender or relax, just to clarify, I don't feel immediately relaxed. It's more just like trying to is the first step. Just try to surrender to it and it's really uncomfortable. You can just, I guess, create a, not a facilitator, simulate, okay, like a simulation flight with trying to replicate some of the symptoms, or not symptoms, some of the sensations that you feel on flights. Get more comfortable with those sensations, how to tolerate them, how to be comfortable in the discomfort of those. Then when you actually fly, when you feel your stomach drop, when you feel kind of in a smaller space, anything that makes you uncomfortable physically, you can tolerate it. So you don't have to love it. The whole point is not necessarily to love everything about flying. It's okay if you feel anxious every single time. I just think it's important to get to a place where you can tolerate that and you can tolerate the flights. And maybe you can get to a point where you start to enjoy them and have fun, because sometimes on flights now, I'm thinking how fun it is that I'm flying. And I think of it that way. Doesn't always work. It does not always work. Sometimes it does. yeah, those are my best pieces of advice. Obviously, seek professional help if you really want to make progress and you actually have a real problem with flying or a phobia. That stuff's really hard to conquer. It's really scary. Hopefully any of that is helpful. Message me or DM me if you guys have other questions about that. I'd love to talk about it. So I noticed that I did get some Dear Abby voicemails. So I think I guilt tripped you guys into sending voicemails. So thank you. I'm glad that my guilt tripping worked. I'm learning a lot from my mom. She's a great guilt tripper. Guilt trippy? No, guilt tripper. Okay, so here is a Dear Abby. Thank you guys. I mean, I still need more. I will always need more.
Dear Abby, I've been struggling recently with letting myself relax. I feel like every time I sit down, I need to be doing something to clean the house or to make myself better. And I feel like I have constantly been go, 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 go. And it is so draining. So my question is, how do I make myself know that it is okay to relax, that it is okay to take a break, and it is okay to simply do nothing? Thanks.
The best way to show yourself that it's okay is just to do it. I know that's not helpful, but sometimes we want to wait. Like sometimes I want to wait till I feel like I am okay to relax, until my brain's like, okay, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. You can relax now. I don't think sometimes our brains will let us until we start to show them that it's okay. So if you feel like your brain, your mind is like, no, you can't relax. No. Get up. It's kind of the same game as, okay, I see you. Maybe I am lazy. Maybe I need to do a million other things before I lay down, but I don't care. I'm laying down. I'm not going to click into those. I'm not going to give that more energy. And instead, I'm going to try something different to see how it makes me feel and see if it's helpful for my overall happiness and well-being. So I'm just going to sit here, listen to these thoughts, and then let them go. And then maybe write in your journal. Maybe just lay there and do absolutely nothing and just start to practice not giving in to those thoughts or not making yourself feel guilty or guilt tripping yourself into doing more. And it definitely gets harder in some points of your life than versus others. Sometimes I'm really good at relaxing. Sometimes it feels like I'm not allowed to or I'm not supposed to. Something that always helped me when I was in yoga teacher training and when I did a lot of yoga was just telling myself, and I would tell my students. My boyfriend always makes fun of me because he doesn't like the phrase give yourself permission, because he's like, what does that mean? I'm like, you just don't get it. You're mentally healthy. You're a boy. You don't get it. Sometimes as a woman or just as someone who feels like they always have to be doing something productive to prove something or to feel even connected to yourself or something. Like that's just what we're used to sometimes. And so it's nice to be able to tell yourself and give yourself permission to relax. Like I'm going to give myself permission to do this. So when we would be doing yoga poses and I'd be like, oh, well, give yourself permission to relax. Give yourself permission to not worry about A, B, or C. And that kind of mentality, I think, is super helpful. Last maybe trick would be, yeah, I think just physically relaxing. No matter what's going on in your head. So just physically relaxing, forcing yourself to relax, take a nice shower, a long shower, start to shave. I don't know. Sometimes that's relaxing when I actually shave my legs and I feel like I'm taking care of myself. I feel cleaned. Do something that's a clear sign of relaxation and ignore the noise in your head, or go have fun. Like go do something fun without feeling like you need to be super responsible, like hyper responsible for everything. Just go have fun. And that is definitely helpful to relax. Whatever that looks like for you, just go have fun. That's very relaxing. And it kind of helps you let things go in the moment. And then that maybe helps you recognize what that's like and how to get there again. We all deserve to relax more than we think. I think we feel we become very perfectionistic, and we also feel like we're lazy or we don't care about this, we don't care about that if we're not constantly cleaning, doing something. It's important to keep intact that mentality of relaxation and that you are whole and you are okay to just be, to just relax. It's nice to be able to do everything, but if you're doing everything to be someone because you feel like who you are without all of the other stuff isn't enough, then I think that could be a deeper reason why it's hard to relax. For me, that's kind of how it feels. So if you get to know yourself a little bit more and recognize that you're still loved, you're still enough, even if you're doing absolutely nothing. And your loved ones love you, even if you're doing nothing. And you can love yourself, even if you're doing nothing. It's easy to see very black and white with like, either we're lazy or we're not lazy, or we're getting a lot done or we're not getting a lot done. And sometimes that looks like, okay, I'm from dusk till dawn, I'm doing something. Or maybe it's the opposite way. Dawn till dusk. Which one is dusk? Which one is dawn? Anyways, sometimes it's nice to take a step back and not look at things so black and white. Life is actually not just black and white in those ways. I did actually this much today, and now let's shift, and now let's do this. And I'm the same person who did all of that, and I get to be the same person doing all of this, and all of her is loved, all of her is okay, all of her is welcome, every version. Hopefully that's helpful. Maybe it's not helpful, but okay, you guys. Well, that's it for this week. Thank you for listening. And I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. I will see you guys again next week. If you want to support the podcast, you can send in a voicemail to Dear Abby. The number is below in the description. And you can like, subscribe, comment on YouTube. You can rate the podcast on both Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Thank you guys for listening. Love you. Have a good weekend. Bye.